In a world of mindless movie cliches, one podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
You could just see cuts happening.
What did that, Lieutenant?
I don't know.
Peter!
The coroner got to say. He's in a jar and puking since he saw it.
You're gonna kill me for sure.
Did you do it?
There was somebody else there.
He was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
No one knows where it came from or who it will visit next.
Nancy?
There's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
No.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails,
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
No one will survive.
Help me, please! Where are you?
From Wes Craven, director of The Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left, a new masterpiece in fantasy terror. Nightmare on Elm Street.
Hello, my name is Mark. I'm talking to Christopher. How are you, Chris?
All right, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. What did you think of this movie the first time you... What do you recall the first time you heard about or saw this movie? What was your first impression?
I think this was like one of the first flicks I got on VHS when I got my VHS player.
Mm-hmm.
And, I missed it in theaters, and it was a big deal when this came out on video.
Was it really?
Yeah, and like from the poster art on down, this thing was like, kick my ass. It was really, really good.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that when I was a kid... I was afraid to see and then you see and you realize it's not that it's so scary. It's just that it's, all right, how do I even put this? The thing that I find that's so scary about this movie is the psychological and, how you can relate to this movie. Everyone can relate to this movie because we've all had a nightmare. We've all had, we all dream. So immediately it touches upon this one natural thing that we all have that's completely intimate, and it creates the worst case scenario. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Like no other horror movie really played on it, in my opinion, as well as Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I just want to back up for one sec. I want to talk about Wes Craven.
Mm-hmm.
I took some heat recently when Wes departed. I was on one of these Facebook sites for one of the many podcasts I listen to, and people were saying, "Oh, this is a big loss of Wes Craven," and.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it might have been me. I might have said, like, are you sure about that?
Yeah, no, and that's what I said. I was like, really? You know, because if George Romero were to pass away tomorrow, I would he's got some great stuff there. If John Carpenter were to pass away tomorrow, I would say, oh, man, these are some of my favorite films he did. With Wes Craven.
Yeah, it's a lot of one-trick ponies.
I say, wow, Wes did a lot of shit. And admittedly, I like his shit, because it's, for whatever reason, it's entertaining. It's entertainingly bad. It's Sometimes it's just bad, bad, like Deadly Friends is bad, bad. Hills Have Eyes 2, the original.
I'm just not a fan, to be honest with you.
Is bad, funny, entertaining. And so my go-to for Wes Craven is never his good stuff. It's his bad stuff. And I don't know why that is. And, you know, people with the Boyle did Scream. And I'm like, you know, I didn't like Scream. I don't like that self-reflexive humor thing that he introduced with that. And, you know, he did Hills Have Eyes. Yes, he did Last House on the Left. That was, you know, those were really good flicks. And he did this, you know. But even with this one, you know, all I think about with Freddy Krueger is how he became kind of like the Roger Moore of horror psycho killers, you know, with all these stupid puns that he did. And his character just got so much progressively cartoonish that, yeah, you know, I couldn't take it seriously. And so it's always shocking to go back to this first film and realize just how scary Freddy Krueger was, and how he's not the whole show here.
He's actually on the screen for only 7 minutes.
Is that right? I mean, he's kept in the shadows. He's not out in the open, like, you know, which one was it? Nightmare on Elm Street 4, I think. You know, he's on a beach wearing shades. You know, it was just getting kind of ridiculous. So that's why I love this one, because it really keeps, like you said, it keeps the horror in the psycho, and he is scary. And the dream sequences themselves, they're pretty elaborate for the low budget that this probably was.
Yeah, I thought the sets and everything looked pretty good.
And these dream sequences really hold up. I was like really surprised by.
I thought the music too held up fairly well.
Indeed, it's an iconic little couple of bars of notes there.
Now, if I can just go back and kind of comment on what you were saying and Wes Craven had a certain way of doing things and everything. And this is where I'm going to offend people who are listening a little bit. I always thought of him as a lot like Kevin Smith. Some people just love Kevin Smith, and they love Mallrats, and they love the New Jersey cinema thing, and I really have no problem with Kevin Smith too much.
I do. I hate him.
It's not for everyone, but I do enjoy his first film, Clerks. It's a guilty pleasure. I think that I find him interesting to listen to. He's a very good storyteller. And actually, if you've never heard him tell stories about, just if you were to look him up and look up any interviews with Kevin Smith, and I think you would find him endearing. But I look at him, Kevin Smith, as having this legion of fans. And I think Wes Craven has a similar group of legion of fans. They overlook the weaknesses, and all they see is the campiness. And that's what they focus on.
You know, is anybody really going to defend Shocker?
Well, you know what? When Shocker came out, though, it had the soundtrack was big, right?
Was it?
I'm pretty sure the soundtrack was a big deal. I'm going to look it up right now. That's all I kind of remember about the movie Shocker. Let's see, Wes Craven Shocker soundtrack. I might even have it on vinyl somewhere. Well, you have Megadeth on it. And Dangerous Toys was on it. That's interesting. Dangerous Toys is kind of a glam band from the late 80s and early 90s that I liked. And a bunch of people, I have no idea who they are. So maybe because of this one band that I liked was on it, and I thought that was pretty cool. All right, it's beside the point. It's kind of a metal type of soundtrack, and I always thought that was the deal with Shocker. I never saw the movie. I have no interest. But back to Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
What do you think about? You know what? The biggest star to come out of this movie. This is his first movie. Johnny Depp. Now, I know you're not the biggest Johnny Depp fan. You kind of like him, though, right?
He's a flexible actor.
Who else?
I recently saw, what's his new movie out? Black Mass? And I was like,
That's the problem with Johnny
Depp. That's all I have is,
But that's the problem with Johnny Depp is you can always find something in his whole collection of works that you can at least a little bit say, oh, all right, it was pretty good. You must. I mean, there has to be something in there, right?
Let me think on that.
No, seriously, what about something like Blow? Did you ever see Blow?
I did. I was there. How many drug kingpin movies can we see? You know,
Who else could pull it off though? Who else could play Hunter Thompson?
All right, I do give you that one. I think that was a
breakthrough performance.
I do like him in it. You know, the movie is. I go back.
I don't think he's the end all be all. I just think that a lot of people come down on him, and I'm not really sure why. I mean, he's still a great looking guy for his age and his amount of substance abuse. And
gone to the well one too many times with those Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah, but come on, with those Disney paychecks, you telling me you wouldn't be signing on the dotted line? I just started watching those for the first time. We watched the first one last week, and it's really long. Have you seen those movies?
I saw the first one, parts of the second one, and stopped after that. I was like, that's enough. It's enough.
My kid sat there for 3 hours. He loved it. I had no idea what was going on. I'm just like, I don't get it. Like, I have no idea what they're just swinging and jumping around. He has gold teeth. Bizarre. But back to Nightmare on Elm Street. all right. Now, I'm going to also take a little bit of blame here, because this is going to be a clipless episode. And this is where Chris thinks I'm going to attack him. And we haven't done an episode in a little while. And this particular episode was kind of thrown together over the past few days. So although this will be a clipless episode, there's not that many clips, I think, that this particular movie could really put out there. Do you think? I mean, there's a couple like lines here and there, but I don't think there's that much. A lot of yelling.
I had 15 clips, but I'm just kidding.
Unfortunately, you never got me this clip list, so therefore I'm sitting here for an hour waiting for Chris to come around to getting onto Skype. I could be clipping those clips and playing them right now, but instead he's singing on, you know, nursery songs to his daughters.
My God.
All right. So with A Nightmare on Elm Street, we're talking, like, do you feel as though this was the first movie of its style to come out?
What, in terms of, like,
of the 80s, anyway? Like, you know, there was pretty much a big lull there. Like, when did Friday the 13th come out? 78?
That was 80. That was 1980. Was that
80? Okay.
So then you had the slashers all throughout the early 80s. Trying to think of what else might have been.
Really, I mean, I felt as though everything came from
in this style. 70s. I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of what, you know, do we consider this a slasher? I guess so. I'd say this is a slasher. But you know, it has a cool concept in terms of using the dreams in which to attack the victims, you know?
Yeah, and I like the way we don't know if it's the dream or not.
Yeah, I there's a, towards the end, I got a little confused as to the dream reality border. You know, specifically when Johnny Depp, again, another great scene where he gets killed and he's sucked into the bed. Mm-hmm. Now remember, Freddy attacks in the dreams. And so Freddy pulls him into his bed, and then the bed shoots out all this blood and gore.
Which was clearly shot by creating the set upside down and pouring it, but it gave the illusion that the blood was pouring straight up onto the ceiling.
hey, I think all of these effects work really well. You know, there's a similar scene in the beginning when the blonde girl, whose name escapes me at the moment, when she gets killed and she's Ronnie dragged Blakely. Along. No,
it's the mom.
Christina, Tina.
Amanda Weiss?
Yeah, that's her. Yeah. And she gets pulled up the wall and over the ceiling, and you know her boyfriend's on the floor. These things look really cool budget flick in 1984.
Do you know what she was in aside from this?
Amanda Weiss?
Yeah.
Wasn't she in Better Off Dead?
Yeah, she played Beth.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
I remember her as being really attractive, and. She was still okay, but I was
she
like,
looked, you know, thought she was hotter. Well, actually, if you look it up, there's a recent headshot.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, she's
a little bit pulled up in the eyes, but you know, hey,
she looks better than Helen Slater. But hey, anyway,
all right, she's 51. But you know what? She's 55.
Wow, really? Holy cow!
So I guess you know what? Maybe you have a point there about
that. See, I told you.
But at least she doesn't look like Elizabeth Shue.
Oh,
she looks like whatever.
But I think these effects work really well in even today. I think they hold up really, really well.
You know why? But, because they were kind of simplistic. There was nothing. There were no frills. It was simple and it was tastefully done. Not tasteful. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It was nicely done.
But like I say, there was a. I think they lose track. Or do they? You tell me. Of the dream reality border. So when Johnny gets sucked down and the gore comes shooting out of the bed, his mom walks into the room and sees this scene. You know, this surreal scene of the gore shooting out of the bed. And I'm wondering,
yeah, is this a crossover?
Right. How can she be seeing that if we understand this to be a dream? You know. So I didn't understand that.
I think that at this point, what we're having is the crossover. We're having like Freddy's hat appearing in the bed.
Right. And that was another thing. So at the end, when Nancy brings Freddy out of the dream and she's booby trapped the house like Home Alone. And so now. We know that Freddy is outside of the dream, and yet strange things happen after that, especially when the mom is sucked also back down into the bed, you know, or dad comes in and they're watching.
Yeah, and then there's lights and stuff
too. Yeah, and then Freddy appears again, and that's when Nancy says, "I don't believe in you," and she turns her back, and that takes Freddy's power away. But I thought he was in the real world, so how is this? You know, I know Nancy says it was in the clip that we were going to play in this spot right here. You know, Nancy says, well, this is all a dream. So that means the whole movie was a dream, I guess. Or and that's where I was getting – I think they were losing the reality dream border.
Towards the beginning, when you first see them going to sleep and a nightmare is about to happen, I just remembered there was one particular scene – that I just thought was so effective. It was a plain wall, and then you see Freddy pushing through a piece of material.
Mm-hmm.
You remember this?
Yep, yep.
And then goes back. I just thought that was so effective and so cheap to do. It's just a piece of like Lycra stretched. And I just thought that was extremely effective. And I just wish movies would do things in that vein now. Instead of it turning into like a big CGI piece of crap,
and even this series as low budget as it remained, it tried to do more and more elaborate things, and you didn't really need to go that route. Maybe you know, maybe the movie makers thought that's what people wanted to see, but I thought the simplicity here and keeping things in the shadows. And keeping it dark and mysterious was a really inspired move. That's why this thing really holds up really well.
There was a lot on the line, though, with this movie. I mean, the whole entire film company was about to go under. And then they basically put their last bit of money into this film. which was financed at $1.8 million, which is a lot of money. Back in 84, I would imagine that's a decent amount of money to put into a film.
Mm-hmm.
So, although low budget, I don't think it was like dirt poor type of low budget. What about, and I just have to ask you about Nancy, the main female character.
Heather Langenkamp.
Very difficult to look at.
She is a terrible actress.
She has the driest hair I've ever seen.
and so much of it, too.
It's like so poofy, and there's just something about her. I didn't find her to be the typical attractive lead because I didn't find her at all attractive.
I wonder if that was intentional, though, that we start the movie with Amanda Weiss's dream, and she's the blonde, and she's good looking, and you think, well, she's going to be our lead, but then she gets killed, and for some strange reason, Johnny Depp is going out with Heather Langenkamp. Somebody's got to explain that to me.
Now, I remember she comes back in part three in The Dream Warriors.
She does.
But what does she look like there? I don't remember.
She looks exactly the same. The hair is the same, poofy. Except now it has a white Bride of Frankenstein streak in it. And she's a terrible actress. And if we had clips, I had a couple of line readings that would have verified this.
The movie's 90 minutes long. Everyone's seen this. But she's just I don't take away anything from her performance. I just felt... Why her? Like, was she somebody's niece or?
Yeah, I have no idea. No idea what. Did she do any? I'm looking right now to see if she did.
She did after school specials.
Wow, look at her current profile picture.
She looks like a perfect mom. Like, she should be in like Gilmore Girls or something.
She did a TV movie.
Yeah, I mean, she. And the other people, I mean,
She was in The Outsiders? No way.
Wow.
Or her scenes were deleted, but still. Is she still working?
I meant to look up Ronnie Blakely because I could not place her in anything.
She was in Robert Altman's Nashville. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, she might have been nominated for an Oscar for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
where I might know her from, actually. Looking here, and I don't know much about.
She is pretty terrible in this, and again, it could, especially at the end, she has a couple of line readings when they finally walk out into the sunshine, and she's like, "Oh, I've given up drinking," and she's got just the way she delivers her lines about bottoming out. It's just so horrible.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I also felt. Like, her makeup was pasty, like, kind of weird. Do you get this kind of, like, it was almost like the kind of makeup you'd find on a corpse?
Yeah, like she's...
Like, kind of greenish.
She's had a hard life, and, you know, she's haggard, but they're trying to pretty her up, and...
So they give her the huge bottle of booze. She's like, sucking down on, like, one of those huge bottles of something or another.
Which again, you know, she did not do that well. She just did not do that well.
Yeah. There's a couple scenes that are a little... There's a lot that's cringeworthy. But all in all, I felt like the movie... The first half of the movie was pretty much a snore fest, I felt.
What?
Yeah, okay. Let's get on with this.
No.
I felt as though the second half of the movie, it really picked up. And I don't know, I really enjoyed it. I thought there was something weird at the end. This was after the Johnny Depp character had died. Her father is a police officer. She cannot escape from her house because
mom has bars. Bars all over the place. I mean, that's and locks on the doors where you need a key on both sides to open.
Right. It's like, is this the, Mommy Dearest house? So she calls her father. Well, let me just also mention that she has her own phone, which was kind of a big deal in 1984. And her phone rings, she answers it, and it's Freddy Krueger going, you know, I'm your boyfriend now. And his tongue comes through the, like, microphone of the phone. It's, like, wiggling. I thought that was very funny. I don't know if I would have found that scary when I was a kid, though. Like, very plastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she calls her father and says, well, I'm just trying to give you a timeline. At midnight, the Johnny Depp character gets killed, right?
Yes. So it was like 10 to midnight because...
But at midnight is when he actually gets killed. Because remember, his radio goes off and it's like, it's midnight or something along those lines. Yeah, yeah. 10 minutes later, the police are there. They're in the middle of an investigation. She gets her father on the phone and says, in 20 minutes... come over. If you don't hear from me, come and break down the door. He's like, no problem.
He's just brushing her off.
Now, this is 10 minutes into the whole thing. You know, he was just killed 10 minutes ago. The police are there. There's, you know, must be like 8 police officers there, like, you know, squad cars. And all of a sudden, she becomes MacGyver. Now, in this 20 minutes, she's going to go to sleep.
No, she has to booby trap the house first.
But she does this all actually in a matter of 10 minutes because she actually, she takes a light bulb. She opens it up, pours gunpowder in from shotgun shells, right?
Yep.
That would take me 45 minutes alone.
She hooks up like a giant sledgehammer over a door.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Like, that's why I was like, oh, that's Home Alone right there.
Yeah, it really is. And you see, and then she goes and has a heart-to-heart with the mother. All in this, you remember? She's sitting in the, and it's like, there's no rush. Oh, no, I have all the time in the world.
And I know mom is, like, all drunk and everything, but suppose mom had to go pee during the night, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
She had to stumble and gets hit by the sledgehammer, you know?
And, you know, there's booby traps. She's like a string, you know, trip string and all this kind of stuff.
And here's one of the things I don't like about this is whenever Robert Englund as Freddy is chasing it, he always like walks into whatever it is, like
yeah.
whether it's a vase I think that she threw at him, or
it's a cobweb.
You know, he does a sort of a very broad jump that is definitely going to miss her because whatever, you know, he's just. He's not a very good chaser.
Yeah, like he puts his arms out so that he absolutely gets hit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, just the way some of that was choreographed, it just looks really kind of clunky.
Yeah, Krueger's not exactly the coolest guy.
Well, up until the end, he is. You know, we see a lot of – he does a lot of cool things, we can say.
I will say the sound of the blades on the metal,
yep.
That goes right up my spine.
Yep, yep.
That I feel is extremely effective. Even when I was a kid, I remember that as being very effective. I would love to see this movie in a theater.
Yeah, I know. It would have been good with an audience.
Even now, I think it would be just as good.
I know I saw Dream Warriors in a theater.
Me too.
Maybe the fourth one as well. Right, that's again, if we had a clip, this series is known for some really great tunes.
Yeah.
And actually this is one clip I did give you yesterday, but I understand if you didn't have a chance to do it. But this has a good end theme song that we could have played. I wonder
if I have it queued up. I'm ready to go on that.
I wonder
if you want to hear a little bit of Dokken, I'm going to play you from Dream Warriors, which is part 3. But here's Dokken's classic. I'll play about a minute of it. If it just wants to queue up here. By the way, I forget the name of the actress that's in part 3.
Besides Heather Langenkamp?
No, it's she's the brother Arquette.
It is an Arquette. Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, she looks good here. This is where her popularity came from, I guess, is this era. She's making a scrapbook for Dokken. I'm going to actually go a minute into the song, which is a pretty cool song, I always
think. We need that chorus. I wonder if these heavy eyes could face the unknown. When I close my eyes, I realize you're coming away. I'm standing in the night alone forever. Together, oh, we're the dream warriors. The one dream no more. We're the dream warriors. And maybe tonight, maybe tonight you'll be gone.
I've seen Dokken play like about 5 or 6 times, and I saw George Lynch, who's the guitarist, play in his band about 2 or 3 times. His band Lynch Mob.
Lynch Mob?
Yeah. The guitarist of Dokken is actually George Lynch. He's a phenomenal player. Such a monster player. But anyway. So they definitely have like kind of a heavy metal process going when it comes to Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm guessing Wes Craven had a soft spot for I guess modern metal.
Yeah.
But I do have the end credits for Nightmare on Elm Street. I'll play at the end. I don't have a name for who it is.
I'm looking right. I think, according to this site, I don't know if this is true. It's A Nightmare by the band 213.
Really?
Never heard of that band.
I'm looking too. So essentially we get to the end of the movie, which kind of comes quickly once you get past the middle. I don't know why I didn't enjoy the beginning. There was something.
Right. That I think this thing is really nicely paced. You got the opening dream. You got the dream where Tina gets killed. Then you got Heather Langenkamp seeing Tina in the plastic body bag at school. Then
that was actually pretty effective. Yeah,
I think there's a whole bunch of. I think all of the dream sequences here are really, really good.
So the one thing that this movie does that I feel like movies now really miss the entire point of is the amount of seriousness in this movie. There's really no sarcasm. There's really no, like, nowadays it's like you get the teens together and, you know, they're too cool for anyone to do whatever, or they're all like, they're not independent. Like they're like nowadays it's almost like it has to have an entire underlining plot. While here it's like, how do I put it? You know, when she asks the Johnny Depp character, do you feel as though, what do you think dreams are? They're having a conversation about dreams.
Yes, yes. That was one of my, clips.
Maybe if you sent them to me.
Because that's when Johnny gives her or implants an idea about the Balinese way of dreaming and dream skills.
But
and
the conversation they have is kind of, it reminded me of the kind of conversation that I had with friends of mine when I was 16 or 17. It's where you're not just, you can ask a ridiculous question to a friend and you're not going to just get a sarcastic and smart ass remark, which is what you would get in today's movies.
Mm-hmm.
I felt as though that was like an honest kind of like I'm going to entertain your ridiculous question and give you an honest answer type of thing.
I think you only had to look at what you're talking about happened in future sequels in the series.
Yeah, and it, like in Scream and like these movies, they became they introduced the level of overly thought out sarcasm, and it's just there's no place for it in a serious horror movie. You know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, another good example. There are goofs. They rip on each other. The kid in a wheelchair. You'll laugh, you'll, you know, chuckle, but that level of sarcasm just doesn't exist. And now you really can't get through any movies without it being there, and I think it ruins it. It's like the, it's like what CGI did to the special effects. It's too, because it's so easy to just be sarcastic. You know, maybe Heathers is another example of a movie that really, really glorified the amount of sarcasm in a movie. And maybe brought it to the mainstream where it's like, ooh, it's cool to be this way. And it's like, and it is. In a lot of ways, it is really cool to be that way. It's just, it's refreshing to see this kind of film and the simple conversations and I guess a disconnect from actual belief. And just getting a perspective of the way these people are. Because we really, these characters are really undeveloped when it really comes down to it. We know nothing about why Johnny Depp's driving in like a 50s car.
A convertible, no less.
And in the beginning, he's dressed like really, really nice. And then it's like he's not dressed nice. It's weird.
where he's wearing the shirt that goes, it's like a half shirt. You know, I didn't know men, I didn't know boys wore that, but it was the 80s. So.
And he had like a 59 Cadillac. It was like, whoa, where'd you get that thing, man?
Well, these do look like well-to-do white people in this movie.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
Look at that house Nancy was living in. Come on. Look at that boombox Johnny had. His family's loaded.
Well, I noticed a 65 Mustang in the background of the girls when they're like playing hopscotch. But you know, for the most part, and you know what? I forget her name, but she does have a phone in her own room. So,
right.
And like I said, that used to be a big deal. So we get to the end of the movie, and all she needs to do is have a disbelief of Fred Krueger at this point. Well, we learn that they basically, he's a child molester and he killed 20 children.
I forget how many kids
it
was.
They said 20. So all the parents got together and killed him. They didn't really go into too many details. Except the mother kept his knives.
Yeah, why? Like, why would she do that?
I don't know.
I didn't understand that part.
There's a lot of stuff here that just didn't make a lot of sense. Cool story, but it didn't make a lot of sense. She's like, come with me to the cellar. It's like, I'm not going with you to the cellar. And then it goes to this big furnace. It's like, what are you doing with that dirty furnace?
Right, like my furnace is not that big. I'm telling you, that family is loaded.
No, that well, that's like an 1800s type of thing. But didn't even look like a working furnace. I don't know. But she had the blades, and the whole thing was it's a very strange movie. I do enjoy it. I don't know how I'm going to feel about the sequels now. So I think that. I don't know. I'll just have to determine how I feel after seeing them.
I wish we could do the second one because I am one of the few people, and this is going to cause controversy. I like the second one. The gay angle, all of it. I like all of it. I think it's a great. I like it a lot. I don't know why people rag on that. Actually, I do know why they rag on it, but.
Well, we'll put it on the list. We'll do it in the future. But the end sequence, do you want to explain what happens?
So, as I said, Nancy turns her back and Freddy disappears. She walks out into sunlight. All of her friends are alive. And they get into this, what'd you say it was, a 57 Caddy that Johnny's driving?
It's like a 50-something Cadillac, maybe early 60s. I'll find out.
A convertible, and mom has given up booze, and life is great.
She gave up booze for what? Like the morning, you know?
Yeah, I have like an hour later, she's all happy after being loaded for most of the night.
Yeah, but you know, all the entire scene is shot with soft focus, So I think immediately I was thinking, anyway, it's a dream.
Well, even Johnny says, can you believe this fog? Because there's fog all over the place.
Right.
And I think this takes place in California, I think. So they all get in the car, all the kids, and the roof of the convertible suddenly just goes on.
Closed, yeah.
And you see that the pattern on the roof is Freddy's sweater. And the doors lock, windows close, and everybody's screaming, and then mom gets sucked in the door.
In a very weird way, like almost like a Barbie doll being pulled through this little window.
I still like that. I know it's, everybody hates that effect, but
no,
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it.
Actually, it was a 1958 Cadillac Series 62 convertible. So I was right, 58, I guess. But it's a beautiful car, you know?
It is. I'm telling you, his family's loaded. They can afford it. Even in 1984, that must have been very expensive.
You think so?
Don't you?
I don't know.
You're the car guy.
I don't know about cars and what they were worth in 1984. I was 11. I don't know. So the whole thing kind of left it open-ended at the end.
Which is what they wanted. I read that, it's lore that Wes didn't like that ending. And he was forced to shoot it, or other people, the producers, shot it without Wes. I'm not really sure.
Gotta end the movie, Wes.
That the producers wanted some kind of sequel option, and that did it.
Hmm. So... one thing that I tend to do whenever we're talking about movies or just I want to do my own research is I kind of hunt around for new podcasts that kind of touch upon subjects that we touch upon. And I came across a couple podcasts, and they seem to have quite a few episodes, these two particular podcasts. I'm not going to name them by name. But one particular one had about four or five people on it. And they were talking about Nightmare on Elm Street. And it was just fucking unlistenable. Not really at first, anyway. It wasn't really the content. The contents appeared to be pretty spot on at first. Until they just started flat out throwing like false things out there. But one person would just be so low. And the other person blaring loud. And then the third person's like, you know, like screaming into it. And I just don't know, like, if you don't know anything about audio, why are you releasing a podcast? Nobody's going to listen to you if it's not listenable. So one thing that really bothered me, and I turned it off as soon as they said this, they said, well, when this movie first came out, Johnny Depp was in the middle of his first season on 21 Jump Street, which is completely wrong. This movie came out in 1984. Actually, it came out November 16th, 1984. So, which is interesting, like right before Thanksgiving this came out. And right after Halloween. Don't you think it would have been better to release this right before Halloween? But whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nightmare on Elm Street was kind of a minor hit. Was this a major hit? You know?
Like you say, I think it had its life. It might have been, you know, moderately successful in theaters, but it really took off on video, I think. That's the way I would.
Yeah, I think I saw it maybe on pay-per-view, actually. Like, it was one of these things where, here we go, box office. It made some good money here, man. It looks like it might have even, it looked like it was the kind of thing that grew. Actually, no, not November 16th. It was released in November 18th. And it made $3 million in that week. It looked like it just grew from that point. The following week, it made $5 million. The following week, $6.5 million. Then $7.5 million. Then almost $8 million. Then $9 million. Then $11 million. You know, so it just kept making a lot of money. It was like a sleeper hit type of situation. You're typing really loud.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. That's all right. So with the podcast I was listening to, Yeah, they were saying that basically Johnny Depp was on the same, during 21 Jump Street, and that happened 3 years later. So little things like that really bother me when people just kind of throw that out there. This other podcast I found on about Nightmare on Elm Street, this was about episode 1, 2, and 3, though. So I really wanted to hear what they had to say about Dream Warriors.
Right.
It was 3.5 hours long for a podcast. Now, what do you think about these very long podcasts? Even this one, we're touching 45 minutes now.
I think they eat up too much room on my iPod. Like, when I get rid of just two podcasts that are 2.5 hours long, mm-hmm. I free up so much space for my, like, for music.
Right.
It's really funny. But, yeah, I mean, you have to be really, really, really good to hold my interest for more than, what, maybe an hour?
Yeah, I mean, I listen to several podcasts.
Maybe. You have to be really good.
I listen to two podcasts religiously. I'm sorry, one podcast twice a week religiously. They release two episodes at 3 hours each. It's a podcast called No Agenda by John C. Dvorak and Adam Curry. This has nothing to do with film, has nothing to do with entertainment. Adam Curry from MTV, I don't know if you remember his name, he's one of the VJs. And they basically talk about politics and everything, and the way they do it is in a completely entertaining, dissecting the media type of way, and they keep it moving. You know, it's a great listen. If I'm going to be listening to somebody for 3.5 hours about one topic, I don't know. I'm going to kill myself. Right?
Like I say, I mean, they have to be really good.
Right.
And how many – there's not many podcasts out there. I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
I don't mind plugging this podcast. It's called the Now Playing Podcast.
I'm going to beep over that.
And I
no, I'm kidding. Now, what and is I it just called?
Now Playing.
Okay.
I really do like these guys. They're really good. But I just wanted to point you there because they're doing all the Star Wars films. So I just thought you'd be interested too. They're good. I think you might like them.
I'm sure that it is good. I have a difficult time listening to other people's opinions on certain movies, and Star Wars is one of them.
Especially when they rag on them.
One of our highest rated episodes of VHS Rewind is our Star Wars episode. It's one of the highest downloaded ones I get emails about it every once in a while. We get people who are like, they listen to it over and over again because they feel as though what we had was a very good rapport about everything. Like you weren't all in about Star Wars and I'm a complete fanboy and we did it with the effects and everything. It's a good podcast, you know, the one that we had. So I do have a hard time listening to other people's opinions on something so important. Especially when I do so many of my own podcasts. I don't like to waste time on other people's podcasts if they can't even put the time in to kind of condense what they're saying a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I even push us to do shorter and shorter podcasts. And I know that's difficult for you because you do like these more epic sweeps. And, you know, I don't blame you. But, you know, it does get a little daunting sometimes when we have, like, very long episodes.
All right, well, we should wrap this up.
Yeah,
then,
let's finish it up. All right, but in the future, I'd like to do a top 10 podcasts review. So
I'm not sure how many I listen to, like, religiously.
Well, I'm sure you can have an opinion.
You know, I do still listen to the podcast that shall not be named, even though we don't like those people.
I have no problem with the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. But their podcast is too long.
Yeah, they routinely get up there.
They're an example of the kind of thing where it's like, hey, how's the weather? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about something that's completely unrelated for a half an hour. All right, let's get into it, guys. And and it's 45 minutes of talking about some good stuff. And then it's like, ooh, all right, well, what are you going to talk about next time? Bleh. And it's like, all right, already, I'm deleting it. And
they're
I'm not that bad. I'm definitely being a dick about it, but I mean,
really, you are on fire today.
These 3-hour podcasts are out of control, though. I have friends of mine who I get along with very well, and they have very long podcasts, and I tell them right to their face, I'm like, dude, I don't even bother downloading your podcast. Because I know I'm not going to listen to a 3-hour podcast about, I don't even want to say what it's about, but we'll see. all right, man. So thanks a lot for getting together tonight, Christopher.
Are you going to take us out with this
end
credit song?
Yeah.
So I just read on a forum here where people think that this end credit song on Nightmare on Elm Street sounds too much like Hellhole by Spinal Tap. So I don't know. I don't know if there is a YouTube clip of
Spinal Tap. Well, I know Tap's. The song Hellhole.
Does it sound like this? It's a nightmare. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you off the air.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Where it stops. So. I don't know why. No, I don't think it sounded like Hellhole.
Oh, so you know Hellhole?
Yeah, you know what? I may as well play it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
No, it didn't sound like